Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy this recording of the reading and sermon from our October 25th service. Reverend Bodie's sermon is titled, The Secret of the Veil. Thanks for listening.
For several years, a person in our congregation who shall remain nameless has been encouraging me to read a short story by the 19th century American author Nathaniel Hawthorne. The title of the story is The Minister's Black Veil. For several years, I have been promising that I would read it. As the story, particularly since the story sounded interesting, but alas, I have never fulfilled that promise. It even kind of got to be a joke between us when we would see each other before he could even ask whether I would read it. I would say, I'm just about to, this month. I'm sure it'll be this month, but I never did. It's been going on for years. Finally, out of desperation, at last year's annual auction in November, this person bought the auction sermon. For those who are uninitiated, you get the choice of a sermon topic if you are the highest bidder. So this person bought my auction sermon to force me to read the story. Even saying afterwards, I don't care if you don't do a sermon on it, just read the bloody thing. And it turns out it only took me 20 to 30 minutes to read it. And it really is an interesting story. Not that I doubted it, but it's really a classic tale. So what I'm going to do for the reading this morning, which will be significantly longer than the normal reading, I'm going to introduce the story to you both by way of summary and by reading some fairly lengthy excerpts from it. And then in my sermon, I'll respond to the story. So our story begins, the story of the minister's black veil. Our story begins with the church sexton ringing a bell, summoning the people of the village to the church service. Now, customarily, the sexton stops ringing the bell when he sees the minister of the congregation, the Reverend Mr. Hooper, leave his parsonage. But this Sabbath morning, the sexton is astonished at the sight of the minister because Parson Hooper, a 30-year-old bachelor, is wearing a black veil made of two folds of crepe cloth that conceal all of his facial features except his mouth and chin. Now, he can see through the veil, but it darkens everything he sees. Of course, the people of the congregation murmur about Parson Hooper's dreadfully changed appearance, questioning if it is even truly his face behind the veil or if he has lost his sanity. And when Reverend Hooper walks to the pulpit, all eyes fixate on the black veil covering his face. His sermon topic concerns the secret sins that people hide even from their close associates, even from their own consciousness, forgetting that the Eternal One is omniscient, all-knowing. The melancholy black veil makes the sermon much more powerful, much more so than the normally mild, calm preaching style of Mr. Hooper. The isolation of Parson Hooper following the service is immediate. No one comes up to talk with him. No one walks by his side. No one invites him to dinner. Rumors of all sorts begin to spread throughout the congregation in the village about the good reverend covering secret sins. The presence of the veil that evening at a wedding ceremony, the wedding ceremony of the handsomest couple in the village, the presence of the veil casts a pall over the whole event. And when Parson Hooper catches a glimpse of himself in the mirror at the reception, he shudders and spills some wedding wine on the carpet and flees the scene immediately. In the days that follow, the Vale's influence dominates the village scene. One mischievous child, for example, mimics the parson, covering his face with an old black handkerchief, but frightening both himself and his playmates in doing so. But no individual, even among the many parishioners who had previously been fully willing to supply the minister with advice, no one now was willing to plainly ask Pastor Hooper why he was wearing this black veil and why he would never take it off. So finally, it was determined that a delegation from the church should call upon their parson in order to deal with this mystery. But, as the author states, and I quote, "Never did an embassy so ill discharge its duties. The minister received them with friendly courtesy, but became silent after they were seated, leaving to his visitors the whole burden of introducing their important business. The topic, it might be supposed, was obvious enough. There was the black veil swathed round Mr. Hooper's forehead and concealing every feature above his placid mouth, on which at times they could perceive the glimmering of a melancholy smile. But that piece of crepe, to their imagination, seemed to hang down before his heart, the symbol of a fearful secret between him and them. Were the veil but cast aside, they might speak freely of it, but not until then. Thus they sat a considerable time, speechless, confused, and shrinking uneasily from Mr. Hooper's eye, which they felt to be fixed upon them with an invisible glance. Finally, the deputies returned abashed to their constituents, pronouncing the matter too weighty to be handled except by a council of the churches, if indeed it might not require a general synod. There was, however, one person in the village, one person who was not overawed by the black veil and who was brave enough to speak about it directly with the parson, and this was his fiancée, Elizabeth. And now I pick up again using Hawthorne's words. When the deputies returned without an explanation or even venturing to demand one, she, with the calm energy of her character, determined to chase away the strange cloud that appeared to be settling round Mr. Hooper every moment more darkly than before. As his plighted wife, it should be her privilege to know what the black veil concealed. At the minister's first visit, therefore, she entered upon the subject with a direct simplicity which made the task easier both for him and her. After he had seated himself, she fixed her eyes steadfastly upon the veil, but could discern nothing of the dreadful gloom that had so overawed the multitude. It was but a double fold of crepe, hanging down from the forehead to the mouth, and slightly stirring with his breath. "No," she said aloud and smiling, "there is nothing terrible in this piece of crepe, except that it hides a face, which I am always glad to look upon. Come, good sir, let the sun shine from behind the cloud. First, lay aside your black veil, then tell me why you put it on." Mr. Hooper's smile glimmered faintly. "There is an hour to come," he said, "when all of us shall cast aside our veils. Take it not amiss, beloved friend, if I wear this piece of crepe till then." "Your words are a mystery too," returned the young lady. "Take away the veil from them at least." "Elizabeth, I will," said he, "so far as my vow may suffer me. Know then, this veil is a type and a symbol. and I am bound to wear it both in light and darkness, in solitude and before the gaze of multitudes, and as with strangers, so with familiar friends. No mortal eye will see it withdrawn. This dismal shade must separate me from the world. Even you, Elizabeth, can never come behind it. What grievous affliction hath befallen you, she earnestly inquired, that you should thus darken your eyes forever? If it be a sign of mourning, replied Mr. Hooper, I perhaps, like most other mortals, have sorrows dark enough to be typified by a black veil. But what if the world would not believe that it is the type of an innocent sorrow, urged Elizabeth? Beloved and respected as you are, there may be whispers that you hide your face under the consciousness of secret sin. For the sake of your holy office, do away the scandal. The color rose in her cheeks as she intimated the nature of the rumors that were already spreading abroad the village. But Mr. Hooper's mildness did not forsake him. He even smiled again, that same sad smile which always appeared like a faint glimmering of light proceeding from the obscurity beneath the veil. If I hide my face for sorrow, there is cause enough, he merely replied. And if I cover it for secret sin, what mortal might not do the same? And with this gentle but unconquerable obstinacy did he resist all her entreaties. At length, Elizabeth sat silent. For a few moments, she appeared lost in thought, considering probably what new methods might be tried to withdraw her lover from so dark a fantasy, which, if it had no other meaning, was perhaps a symptom of mental disease, though of a firmer character than his own. The tears rolled down her cheeks. But in an instant, as it were, a new feeling took the place of sorrow. Her eyes were fixed insensibly on the black veil when, like a sudden twilight in the air, its terrors fell around her. She arose and stood trembling before him. And do you feel it at last, then? Said he mournfully. She made no reply, but covered her eyes with her hands and turned to leave the room. He rushed forward and caught her arm. Have patience with me, Elizabeth, cried he passionately. Do not desert me, though this veil must be between us here on this earth. Be mine, and hereafter there shall be no veil over my face, no darkness between our souls. It is but a mortal veil. It is not for eternity. Oh, you know how lonely I am and how frightened to be alone behind my black veil. Do not leave me in this miserable obscurity forever. Lift the veil but once, and look me in the face, said she. Never. It cannot be, replied Mr. Hooper. Then farewell, said Elizabeth. She withdrew her arm from his grasp and slowly departed, pausing at the door to give one long, shuddering gaze that seemed almost to penetrate the mystery of the black veil. But even amid his grief, Mr. Hooper smiled to think that only a material emblem had separated him from happiness, though the horrors which it shadowed forth must be drawn darkly between the fondest of lovers. From that time, no attempts were made to remove Mr. Hooper's black veil, or by a direct appeal to discover what it was supposed to hide. And as the author says, in this manner, Mr. Hooper spent a long life, irreproachable in outward act, yet shrouded in dismal suspicions, kind and loving, though unloved and dimly feared, a man apart from men, shunned in their health and joy, but ever summoned to their aid in mortal anguish, because from the time that the Reverend Mr. Hooper donned this veil, he became a more effective minister and preacher. Strangers came from long distances to be present at his services. And particularly for sinners and for those near death, the Reverend Mr. Hooper carried special power. Indeed, as the author put it, dying sinners cried aloud for Mr. Hooper and would not yield their breath till he appeared. There was one final attempt to have Mr. Hooper remove the veil, and this was on his deathbed, attended by his former fiancée, Elizabeth, now a nurse, and by a fellow clergyman. But as this clergyman bent down to remove the veil from the dying parson, with a final burst of energy, Mr. Hooper took both hands from beneath his bedclothes and firmly pressed them to the black veil, crying, "Never, never on earth, never." And thus he died, the black veil still on his face, even being buried in the black veil, never saying what compelled him to make such a vow as to wear a black veil for his entire life. Nathaniel Hawthorne, 1804 to 1864, was part of that remarkable group of figures in Concord, Massachusetts in the middle part of the 19th century, part of the Transcendental Club, which had Ralph Waldo Emerson at its center. As a matter of fact, Hawthorne, for a time, rented a house from Emerson. The first of his three children were born there in 1844. Hawthorne, of course, is most known for his novel, The Scarlet Letter. But another famous book is Twice Told Tales, a collection of short stories, which includes this minister's black veil, published in 1836. He was only a young man in his early 30s when it was published. The driver in this story is the mystery, the secret of the black veil. Why, the good people of this New England parish want to know, why has their minister covered his face with a veil, and why will he never take it off? They send a delegation to meet with the reverend, but they are too intimidated by the veil even to ask. They don't ask, he doesn't tell. His betrothed wife, however, the one who will be his intimate partner, is not intimidated. And to her, as we read, the veil is just a simple piece of black fabric, such as is worn by many women from their hats. So, dear, won't you please tell me why you are wearing this veil? And, dear, won't you please take it off? People may think you a little daft. The responses from her husband-to-be are enigmatic, possibly evasive. But one thing that we learn about the secret of the veil is that the veil cannot be removed, not on this side of the grave. And so sadly, regretfully, her would-be husband gives up his chance at human intimacy and love, and his betrothed, Elizabeth, leaves his presence in horror, to return only once years later, that upon his deathbed as a nurse. It's on his deathbed that we get another clue to the secret of Parson Hooper's veil. Through the whole of his life, despite much gossip and speculation, nothing was revealed about why he had put it on in the first place and why he kept it on. But surely upon his deathbed, the veil could be removed. A kindly colleague, a fellow clergyman who came to attend him in his dying hours, suggests that now is the time. Whatever the reason for the veil being worn throughout his life, surely now that reason has been fulfilled, the task accomplished. But as his colleague bends down to remove the veil, with his final energies, Pastor Hooper firmly holds the veil to his face, crying out that this veil is part of his mortal life, and his mortal life is not yet over. And so, as he steadfastly holds the veil to his face, he gives us yet another clue about the secret of the veil in a part of the story I didn't read earlier. When his frightened ministerial colleague is held back from removing the veil, this colleague exclaims, "Dark old man, with what horrible crime upon your soul are you now passing to judgment?" Then writes Hawthorne, "Father Hooper's breath heaved. It rattled in his throat. But with a mighty effort, grasping forward with his hands, he caught hold of life and held it back till he should speak. 'Why do you tremble at me alone?' cried he, turning his veiled face round the circle of pale spectators. 'Tremble also at each other. Have men avoided me and women shown no pity and children screamed and fled only for my black veil? What but the mystery which it obscurely typifies has made this piece of crepe so awful? When the friend shows his inmost heart to his friend, the lover to his best beloved, when man does not vainly shrink from the eye of his Creator, loathsomely treasuring up the secret of his sin, then deem me a monster for the symbol beneath which I have lived and die. I look around me, and lo, on every visage a black veil." So, what we learn is that the Reverend Mr. Hooper's veil is for everyone. He wears this veil for everyone. Everyone, in his view, has an unseen veil that they wear, hiding a deeper, larger reality, but he is making the invisible visible. He wears the veil as a symbol for a universal human truth. And there's an interesting note by the author following the short story that confirms this reason why Parson Hooper wears the veil. The note reads, "Another clergyman in New England, Mr. Joseph Moody of York, Maine, who died about 80 years since, made himself remarkable by the same eccentricity that is here related of the Reverend Mr. Hooper. In his case, however, the symbol had a different import. In early life, he had accidentally killed a beloved friend, and from that day till the hour of his own death, he hid his face from men." And so, according to the author, it would appear that there was no traumatic event or secret sin that Parson Hooper was covering over. It was some more fundamental reason, something fundamental about human nature that Parson Hooper had come into touch with. And that is my read on the secret of the veil in this short story, namely that the Reverend Mr. Hooper has somehow come to a realization that there is a subterranean reality and depth existing below the surface of things, and that he needed a symbol to call attention to this deeper reality. He needed to witness to it. In other words, Parson Hooper's wearing of the veil was not to conceal some personal misdeed from his community, but rather it was an attempt to reveal to them, a truth that had been made known to him. Reverend Hooper had somehow caught a glimpse of a transcendent reality, and this glimpse shattered the conventional life that he had been a part of up to that time. Now, it would appear to be a dark revelation, a revelation of some fearsome reality that judges us all. All of us woefully fall short of moral perfection. No one can stand before the awful face of this awesome reality. And Reverend Hooper's encounter, his realization, his revelation, his visitation with this transcendent reality is one that also humbles him. It does not raise him above others, except that he sees. His eyes are opened, and he can no longer live as he had lived before. Psychologically speaking, Reverend Hooper's ego, his self-identity, had received some kind of shattering blow, had come into contact, some kind of shattering encounter with larger dimensions of the psyche, so that he can no longer present the same face, the same persona to the outside world. To be true to his experience, to be true to his vision, to be honest with his society, and to share his gift of knowledge with them, he had to somehow mark that encounter, and the symbol that he chose to mark his realization is indeed a potent one, this symbol of the black veil. It fascinates everyone in the community. It also frightens everyone in the community. It also frightens himself. At one point in the story, the author tells us that the good reverend, quote, never willingly passed before a mirror, nor stooped to drink at a still fountain, lest in its peaceful bosom he should be affrighted by himself. And so bearing witness to his discovered truth through this symbol cost him dearly. It cost him his peace of mind. It cost him all love, intimacy, and friendship. It separated him from all others so that he was a man apart, completely swallowed in his role. He became a symbolic being, such as other public figures might be, a symbolic being and not really a human being anymore. And certainly, one can question whether one ought to sacrifice one's human life in such a way, disappearing so completely into one's role. I think here of priests and nuns in their celibate roles, disappearing, as it were, into the role. But at the same time, Parson Hooper was able to help people, many people, who sensed in him someone acquainted with reality in its depths, someone acquainted with their griefs. And by sacrificing his personal happiness, he thus enabled others to live more fulfilled lives. Others could sense in him a truth about reality that they didn't have to live because he was living it for them. They could be touched by that reality without being overwhelmed or shattered by it, and without being isolated and mocked for it, as Reverend Hooper was. And one can also question, I suppose, something of the content to which Parson Hooper was drawing attention, this dark world of the Puritan concentration on sin, guilt, and shame, this veil of tears, to play on the word veil, this transcendent, fearful God of judgment, much less of mercy. In terms of the secret of the veil, however, I am not so interested in the particular content to which Parson Hooper was trying to draw attention. I'm more interested in the general structure of things in which the veil points us, reveals to us larger hidden realities. Halloween is approaching. This is Halloween Sunday. And this is the time, as it is said, when the veil between the worlds is thinnest. It's a time, therefore, that invites us to become aware of something other than surface realities, as I trust Parson Hooper was. The veil reminds us that there are depths, and depths under depths, depths first of all to our own personalities. The face that we wear is far from the whole story of who we are. There are large swaths of personal reality that are not revealed by our public face. In psychological terms, we are not just persona, as important as that is. There is a hidden depth to our being. There are many potential selves that we might become and that long to be realized. And which of these potential selves, which of these possible faces shall we try to bring forward to the outside world? And what happens to those potential selves that are not brought forward, that are shut off, shut down? At Halloween, we make some attempt to honor these other selves, bringing out their energies with our masked faces. So the veil reminds us, first of all, that we are more, much more, than the present face we show to the world. It reminds us also that we all throw a shadow, that we tend to cast upon others what we have not honored, engaged, or integrated into our own personality. And we make of others, casting our shadow upon them, we make of others either demons or heroes. The work of a lifetime, as has been said, is to own your own shadow. So the veil reminds us that we both thirst for and are frightened of our own depths. The veil cautions us that times of exploring and sharing such hidden depths, that these are sacred times. They require sacred space, bounded space. And when entering such space, when drawing back the veil, it is recommended that you do so cautiously, carefully, for there is good reason to be afraid of those depths, part of the fear that comes out in Halloween. And I also wonder about a world where veils would not be recognized or honored, a world where we would have no secrets, and where everything would be thrown open for whomever would like to peer in. I wonder about the substance of veils in this, our Facebook world. Then secondly, the presence of the veil comes into play when we enter into the realm of what is called original experience, uncharted territory. That is territory that is not known or acceptable to ourselves, our family, our community, our culture. In our story, the Reverend Mr. Hooper, as I take it, has entered into such uncharted territory, a lonely and solitary journey, and he needed a veil to protect his experience, I think both to remind himself and to remind others that he had been in uncharted territory. His story brings to my mind the story of another journey into uncharted territory. And this is a strange little account that we find in the Hebrew Scriptures with respect to Moses at the time when he was on the mountain receiving the tablets of the law. In the account of Moses receiving the law, this is the law that will guide his people. Out of the blue, there are five little verses in the book of Exodus that talk about Moses having an encounter with the other side. Moses said to Yahweh, his God, "Show me your glory, I beg you." And he, Yahweh, said, "I will let all my splendor pass in front of you, and I will pronounce before you the name Yahweh. I have compassion on whom I will, and I show pity to whom I please. But, you cannot see my face." You cannot see my face, he said, "for man cannot see me and live." And Yahweh said, "Here is a place beside me. You must stand on the rock, and when my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft of the rock, and I will shield you with my hand while I pass by. Then I will take my hand away, and you shall see the back of me. But my face is not to be seen." And that's apparently what happened on that mythical, magical mountain. Moses glimpsed the backside of God and was not incinerated, though I suspect had he seen the face of the Almighty Eternal, his psyche would have been blown apart, like one whose circuits are blown on a too potent LSD trip. Apparently, even seeing the backside of God is very dangerous, perhaps more dangerous than Moses knew. For as the story goes, when Moses came down from that mountain with the commandments of the law, those two tablets of stone, it is said that unbeknownst to him, the skin of his face was radiant. It was aglow with the glory of his encounter with the backside of God, with the divine, one who had come close to a nuclear reaction. So much so that the children of Israel and even his brother Aaron withdrew from him and would not go near to him. And as the story goes, from that time forward, Moses was forced to wear a veil over his face when he was in the presence of other humans to protect them from the encounter that he had had with the divine. Glimpsing even the backside of the Eternal has set Moses apart. He had been bold to venture into uncharted territory, and it separated him from his people. And so I suggest, put on a symbolic or even a literal veil when attempting to share your deepest experiences of connection, wonder, love, and awe. Choose carefully when, where, and to whom you will open your soul, lest it be more than the other can receive, lest it be trampled underfoot, and you along with it. And then, quickly, a third and final aspect of the veil and its secret is a truth that has been recognized by all mystics, namely, that there is a veil thrown over all visible reality. Every one of us, every mortal being, is shrouded in a veil. Every finite entity carries with it a secret, namely, that it hides a depth that can never, ever be plumbed. Nothing finite is as it appears on the surface. Every single thing points beyond itself to an infinite depth. The best cannot be told, says Heinrich Zimmer, Joseph Campbell's mentor. And the very first line, the very opening line of the Tao Te Ching says, the Tao that can be known is not the eternal Tao. And says Goethe, all that is transitory is but a metaphor. All that doth pass away is but a symbol. Each of us, therefore, as finite mortal beings, each of us are metaphors, symbols that point beyond ourselves to a larger transcendent reality and an unfathomable depth. We belong to this reality, even as we are separated from it. And the veil reminds us both of our connection to this depth dimension and our distance from it. Every finite mortal being is clothed in a veil that both protects it from and connects it to the infinite that is on the other side of that veil. The good Reverend Hooper of our story had somehow come to this realization, and thus he knew and insisted that so long as he had mortal life, he needed to wear that veil. Never, never, so long as he had breath, should that veil be removed.